Alejandro Freed is with us. He is an ecologist, author of A World for My Daughter. He works for First Nations of British Columbia Central Coast and is an adjunct assistant professor at the University of Victoria, lives in British Columbia, and he is here to talk about his latest work, which is called Changing Tides, and this is about the future of the world, a big topic. And good morning to you, Alejandro Freed.
Good morning. It's great to be here.
Well, what is your take on what's going on with the world at large from an ecological perspective and where we're going?
Well, I think we've put ourselves in a tough situation, but the key message that I'm trying to convey in the book is that we still have a range of possibilities about where we can go, but we have to act quite decisively to switch in, you know, in a better direction. If we act very quickly in the next few years, and then by that I mean less than 10, we can end up in a place that we're in a better situation in terms of dealing with climate change issues and as well as avert some of the worst of the climate and biodiversity crisis.
In the near term, what are some of the steps that can be taken?
Well, absolutely, number one is we have to start reducing our emissions to the point that you know, the concentrations of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere start declining. That's going to take some time, but I think we have some really good opportunities with the rise of renewables, as well as with changing economics in the sense that it's just not that profitable to go after fossil fuels anymore. If we leave it to market forces, things won't happen that quickly. So we need to proactively speed up that transition to renewables.
The book from Alejandro Freed is Changing Tides, An Ecologist's Journey to Make Peace with the Anthropocene. You write that I do not advocate a switch to a global economy in which we all make a living by hunting, gathering, fishing, and tending native species. If we could, we would be healthier with more time in our hands and less clutter in our minds. We would be better connected to our relatives and the beauty of this world. But you write, we are hundreds of years too late for that.
Yes. So, I mean, if you look at some of the traditional cultures, you know, some of the lifestyles, way of being, you know, fit into that description from the book that you just read. But, of course, now we have, you know, millions upon millions of people in cities. And so we've changed the world irrevocably, and we have to work with that. So, you know, of course we're going to have, you know, big scales of economy. We need food production that can feed, you know, our millions of people. But there's a different way of doing this than we have been doing it, something that's less fossil fuel intensive, something that focuses more on local ecosystems and just pursues less less destructive practices. And through the book, I give examples of some of the indigenous peoples that I work with, how they have revitalized their traditional knowledge and they're integrating it with science. And in a modern context, that it's giving us a, let's call it a shift of, you know, how we view ourselves in the world, and which I think can empower us to do much better than we have been doing so far.
Alejandro Freed in Changing Tides writes, I regularly spend time with some of the indigenous leaders who are helping their communities emerge from the dark horrors of colonization, revitalizing their cultures into something that is both modern and grounded in tradition. I have stacks of handwritten journals from my time in villages and in the field, and those journals, I believe, hold key insights into the issues that I seek to understand. What can we learn from others regarding how we adapt to these times?
One of the things that really strike me from the indigenous people that I work with is how hard they were hit by colonization, as you alluded in that passage from the book. You know, there was tens of thousands of people living in different parts of the coast. Through epidemics, they were reduced to, you know, mere few hundreds here and there. There was racist policies from the Canadian government that banned their practices for culture, for language. But now that things have changed in the sense that, you know, institutionalized racism is, you know, has diminished substantially, I see a lot of resilience, a lot of rebuilding of culture and empowerment. And to me, if they can do that, it's an example of, you know, the power of the human spirit to rise up from some real difficult situations. And to me, it's a metaphor of how society at large can rise right now and address the very pressing climate and biodiversity crisis that we're facing.
Holly in the Garden District asks Alejandro Freed, do you live in an urban area or do you live in an area that's sparsely populated?
I live just outside Vancouver, so even though my immediate surroundings are sparsely populated, I'm within a short distance of the big city of Vancouver, which has a couple million people.
Beautiful city, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Are they doing things in Vancouver that we should be doing in New Orleans and Baton Rouge and New York and Los Angeles?
Well, I think there's a lot of good leadership from municipal leaders, not only in Vancouver, but as far as I'm aware, in other cities across the states. For example, the banning of plastic bags is a really good start that's happening across Vancouver. The rise of bike lanes and expansion of public transport, just ways that keep us out of our individual cars burning fossil fuels and that promote, just a more sustainable living. So I see that across various cities, not only in Canada, but also in the U.S.
Alejandro Freed's book is Changing Tides. You say that First Nations acquired the ability to store dry fish for the lean winter months thousands of years ago, which introduced new challenges for conservation, and you are a real believer in food preservation. How will this allow people to harvest more than can be eaten before spoilage?
Yeah, when I talk about food preservation in the book, it's part of the building the case that First Nations, in British Columbia, which, according to the archaeological record, lived in villages for over the last 14,000 years and developed very large populations. At the estimate of for the number of people in British Columbia and adjacent areas from before colonization goes from it ranges from 100,000 to 200,000 people. So that's enough to cause a lot of resource depletion. And then if you're able to store food, you could basically be harvesting a lot more that you would justify otherwise. But the key message of the book is you had these hundreds of thousands of people on the coast, some with some very sophisticated fishing technologies. They can store food, but they're managing to avoid resource depletion over thousands and thousands of years. Now, this doesn't happen, without some real intentional cultural and social practices, social institutions in which they self-regulate their harvest. And that's what we're starting to see become incorporated into some fishery management policies that are being developed in Canada, and which I hope provide a bigger model for what can be done at a broader scale in other parts of the world.
Well, the book, again, Changing Tides, An Ecologist's Journey to Make Peace with the Anthropocene, from Dr. Alejandro Freed, that's F-R-I-D. It's an important book regarding the future of the world, a big topic, and he gives it his best shot and some pertinent information for all of us. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you. It's great talking with you.
Appreciate it, Dr. Alejandro Freed. And congrats to the New Orleans Saints, who clinched the NFC South last night, the division title, with a 26-18 win in Atlanta over the Falcons. Pedestrian day for Drew Brees, 18 of 30 for 184 yards and a touchdown, but he now has thrown for more than 10,000 passes. Only Brett Favre has done that before him in the history of the National Football League. The LSU Fighting Tigers, 17-point favorites over Texas A&M tomorrow night, 6 o'clock kickoff at Tigers Stadium. LSU trying to avenge a 7 overtime defeat to the Aggies last year in College Station. And we'll see how it goes. But LSU also trying to go 12-0 for only the second time in history. LSU undefeated in its first 11 games, and the last loss was that 74-72 overtime thriller in College Station in November of a year ago. Signature support for Talk Louisiana comes from Brian Lowe Financial.